How can you achieve and maintain business growth? Harvard Business School Executive Education is now accepting applications for a new program, Driving Profitable Growth. Taking place in Boston from October 25th through the 28th, this program focuses on business expansion and organizational growth strategies that can lead your company into the future. Learn more about this three-day program for senior leaders by visiting hbs.me/growth. That's hbs.me/growth.
You are Locked On Thunder, your daily podcast on the Oklahoma City Thunder, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello there, everyone. We're locked in for episode 92 of Locked On Thunder, presented by the Norman Transcript. I'm your host, Fred Katz. Locked On Thunder is part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Head on to iTunes and search Locked On Thunder to subscribe to the podcast there. And you can leave a review once you're on that page also. Find us on audioboom.com too, and log on to normantranscript.com to check out my blog, Thunder Road. It's under the sports tab on the site, and you can get all your Thunder coverage there on every day of the week. I know I was off Friday last week for the holiday. Back to Monday through Friday again. Today, previewing the Knicks. Thunder play the Knicks on Monday night. From Locked On Knicks, the host of Locked On Knicks, and my buddy, Jared Dubin. Jared, what's going on?
Not too much, man. How are you?
I'm good. Ready to I'm flying into New York. We're recording this like Sunday morning, so flying into New York later today. I'm like, it's nice when work pays for a trip for you to go home.
Yeah, I was going to say, are you excited to come home?
I'm like barely home. I get in at like 11:30 p.m. and I leave early morning on Tuesday.
Let me ask you this. When you come to New York for work now, where do you stay? You stay like at your parents' house? You stay at a hotel?
What? I stay at my girlfriend's.
Okay. Oh, because she's still here, right?
Because she's still in New York.
Yeah.
It's the beauty of the long distance relationship. It's the only positive.
I don't want to cast aspersions on Oklahoma City, but she didn't want to move out.
No, she can't for work. So
yeah,
doesn't work.
That's what they all say, Fred.
It was her opportunity to spend less time with me. That was really what it was.
Who would make that decision? That seems like a bad decision.
You don't spend enough time with me to realize that it's the right one.
It's true. I've only spent time with you in short bursts. So I don't have to live with you.
Exactly. I'm not staying with you when I come back to New York.
Oh, man.
Unfortunately.
That's what I miss. You got to come back more often.
I know. Unfortunately, the Porzingis family wouldn't let me stay over.
You don't get that invite?
No. That's my transition.
Invite though. To the Anthony family Thanksgiving.
Yeah, exactly. Lala wouldn't have it. And I'm not going to pull a Derrick Rose and just be like, I'm coming.
It's funny. They always have, I don't know if it's the same people, but whenever they have the people over, like whenever the Wades are there, I feel like they take the same picture with all of them smoking cigars. I feel like I saw the same picture last year too.
you want to talk about Kristaps Porzingis? I feel like this has to be the first thing.
I really do. Like, I don't think people talk about him enough.
Yeah. No one even knows who that guy is.
The dude is good.
Here's the thing. He's actually really good. Like he gets a lot of hype, but it's pretty warranted.
Yeah. I mean, just the shooting improvement this season is sort of the thing that jumps out right away. You know, he's gone from 42% from the field and 33% from three. To 49% from the field and 40% from three on more attempts for both. It's pretty awesome. Like he's taking a higher percentage of his shots from three, making more threes. And the really, really big thing is that his finishing around the basket is so much better this year. Like he was a below average finisher near the rim for a player of any size last season, and he's now become one of the best finishers in the league. Like he's shooting 75% inside 3 feet, which is like LeBron level. Which is just when you saw how he finished on the interior last year, how like a little bit of contact could throw him off. Now he's finishing through contact all the time, all different kinds of creative finishes, you know, whether it's layups or runners or bankers off the glass on the move. Just the variety of ways he's getting his points and the level at which he's efficient with them now is just so impressive for a year one to year two jump.
You know what it reminds me of? And it's an analogy that that Thunder fans will understand. Maybe they won't appreciate it, but they'll understand it. It reminds me of Kevin Durant year one to year two.
That was a sort of pie in the sky comparison before his first season. Like, I thought it was a little bit ridiculous. It still is a little bit ridiculous, but
I'm not saying in terms of his quality.
I don't think he's as good. Variety of things he can do is similar, I think.
Yeah, but no, I don't think, and the type of improvement, like, I don't think he's as good as Durant. I think he's great. Like, I think he's going to be a many time All-Star.
I think he's, look, saying someone's not as good as Kevin Durant is not an insult. That's like,
I know that, but it's
like
2016.
The best player of their generation.
It's 2016, and if you don't say a person is the best player of all time, then you're a hater. So I have to qualify. But
yeah, well, that was funny. Like, during the Knicks game the other night, Clyde was Ewing was back in the Garden because he's an assistant coach for the Hornets, and Clyde was like, you know, Patrick Ewing, the second best Knick of all time, is in the house tonight, and I was like, you know, is he talking about himself or Porzingis at number one? you know, obviously, like, he has said many times that he thinks Willis Reed is number one, and people on Twitter were like, he's talking about Willis Reed. And I was like, yeah, I know. I was making a joke.
Clyde is the best.
He's so good. He's so great.
The Knicks have maybe the best broadcast crew in the league. Like, definitely one of the best.
Top two or three.
Yeah, they're great. Nets are great. Yep. Wolves are great. There's some good broadcast teams. Knicks are really good.
That's pretty clear right there. Top three, though, to me at least.
Yeah, that's really good. Anyway, back to my kind of shoddy analogy. Kevin Durant as a rookie was like what, 41-42% from the field. He shot under 30% from three. He was getting pushed around because, remember, he couldn't lift a bench press at the combine. He was skinny and he was getting pushed around. He didn't finish through contact well. He shot a pretty low percentage on two-pointers, shot a really low percentage on three-pointers because he just – you could tell – you knew he was going to shoot. He just wasn't doing it as a rookie, and a lot of rookies have those problems. These are all, like, rookie problems. Like, I was talking about – I sit next to Royce Young on press row during games, and Royce and I were talking about in the game yesterday. We were talking about Sabonis. Like, we both think he's going to be good. And part of the thing is because all of the flaws that he has right now are like very aside from the fact that he doesn't have a right hand, and the fact that he just like will never obviously have the length to play center or be a rim protector or anything like that, and kind of has to be a four because of that. Many of his flaws are rookie flaws, like hesitance to shoot, rookie flaw, inconsistency, rookie flaw, fouling a lot, rookie flaw. Like a lot of these things, maybe scrambling a little bit too much and going to the wrong places on defense every once in a while, rookie flaw. Like, these are all very rookie flaws. And a lot of Porzingis' flaws physically last year were rookie flaws. Same kind of stuff we saw from Durant. And now it's just kind of like it almost seems like it's distantly in the past.
Yeah. Before I respond to that, can you pick that up right there? The name that you just dropped?
Can you do that for me? Royce, yeah. don't give Royce that satisfaction of making him think that he's a name drop.
It's a little bit of a name drop. But yeah, no, I agree with you about Sabonis. I like his skill set a lot too. I agree that I don't think he'll ever really be able to be a center because of his lack of length and like the fact that he's probably never going to be quick enough to cover enough ground to be the guy on defense. But he's just such a skilled player, and you see that in spurts, but not necessarily consistently. I liked Zach Lowe's comp for him, which was like a more skilled Mitch McGarry, but without the weed. and I thought that made a lot of sense, and that's like why I have high hopes for him. With the KD and Porzingis thing, I think another factor is, you know, KD played shooting guard his whole rookie year. Very obviously playing out of position on both ends. KP played power forward for the most part last year, still does a lot this year, but he has played more center this year than he did last year, and I think that gives him a lot more space to work with offensively. It gives Melo a lot more space to work with offensively, and it gives Derrick Rose and Brandon Jennings, guys who need more space, especially for the way they play, it gives them a lot more space to work with offensively. And I think you've seen over these last five or six games or so, you know, with Joakim Noah either out or not playing a lot of minutes when he's in, how much that really helps those guys on offense. And that's been, you know, one of the big improvements over this last, you know, six or seven game stretch where the Knicks have won five of seven, is there's just so much more space on the court for them on offense. And a lot of that is KP and Melo moving up a slot.
What's up with their defense? They are low. I forget what they are. They're definitely bottom 10. Are they bottom 5
defense? But it has been a lot better recently. Basically, since that Dallas game, it's been much better.
Is that because Kurt Rambis is running it?
Some of it, I thought, was because they hadn't really played a certain style of point guard. So you looked at the first few games of that stretch. They played Dallas. There wasn't really an attacking point guard. Like, J.J. Barea was the guy. Then they played Detroit, and it was Ish Smith. Those two games, the Knicks played well defensively for the most part. Then they played Washington, and John Wall killed them. Then they came back and played Atlanta with Dennis Schroeder, again, not really an attacker, and the defense was really good, especially in the second half. But then these last few games, they played Portland and Charlotte twice, and they did a really good job against Damian Lillard and CJ McCollum in that first game, held them both under their season scoring averages. Then they did a really good job on Kemba Walker in the second game, which they also won. They did not quite as good of a job on Kemba last night on Saturday, but I thought the defense was pretty good still overall. So that there has been an improvement over these last five, six games or so. I don't know if it's necessarily Rambis. You know, the one thing that's noticeable is that they're not switching quite as much since he, quote unquote, took over the defense. But I think a lot of it is the communication is better also. That was something that they were botching, like very easy pick and roll coverages early on in the season. And these last few games in particular, that has been cleaned up a whole lot.
You want to hear something? You want to hear something impressive? Check out this transition. You know who's an attacking point guard? Russell Westbrook.
No,
it's a pretty good transition.
Yeah, he gets into the paint a few times a game.
Like a decent amount, I would say. You know what's weird about the Thunder? The Thunder are it's a weird thing, and I'm actually going to ask Billy Donovan about this at Shoot Around tomorrow, where they are very high ranked. I haven't checked in a game or two exactly where, but they're very high ranked. I mean, we're talking top five or something in field goal attempts in the restricted area.
Yep.
They shoot a relatively, I mean, look, it's obviously still an efficient shot because you're in the restricted area, so it's great. Anytime you can get to the restricted area a ton of times, that's really good. You're taking good shots. But they're below league average on their percentage in there, and they so rarely get to the line, which is weird. Usually, if you're going to shoot a ton in the restricted area, it's going to pair up with a lot of fouls, a lot of free throw attempts. Westbrook obviously goes to the line a ton. Pretty much nobody else on this team goes to the line. You know, Adams, you know, falls away from fouls and shoots hook shots and that kind of stuff and doesn't go to the line that often. And when he goes hard, it's usually when there aren't a ton of guys there. And he just doesn't go to the line that often, even though he's shooting free throws very well now. Victor Oladipo pretty rarely goes to the line for a guy who's deemed an attacking player, even though I don't think he's necessarily an attacking player. He's really been a priority jump shooter this year, which has been fine. Like, He has become, man, I don't know if this is, but it's been for 18 games now where Victor Oladipo has been one of the best jump shooters in the league this year, which is very interesting.
At the start of the year, the first, I'd say, five games or so, he was shooting like below 20% from three, I think.
Yeah, well, he's shooting like almost 50% on catch and shoot threes right now.
Yeah.
Which is the free throws,
I think a lot of it is like, Westbrook, I think, is second in the league in drives per game, which is, I checked yesterday. Isaiah Thomas was the only guy ahead of him. I think he's still there. But the Thunder are in the bottom 10 overall. So it's like Westbrook is going to the basket a ton, but nobody else is. A lot of those restricted area shots are either Westbrook's initial shot or like an offensive rebound or something that happens in transition. Nobody else gets to the basket in the half court for the most part. And that's usually where you're going to get your fouls at. And a lot of times, even when Westbrook gets all the way to the rim, he's so athletic that he can avoid contact and still get the shot up. So even he's not getting fouled as much on his way to the rim as other high-level drivers are.
Yeah. No, I mean, it is certainly true. He goes at the rim like a madman. And they but the thing is, they're getting – what's interesting is they're not really getting that many passes off – not many dump-offs off of Westbrook's drives now. They're getting threes off of Westbrook's drives. And in the past, when Westbrook's run pick and roll and gone to the rim, or just, you know, driven off of an ISO or whatever it is, they've often been able to find a pocket pass to Steven Adams. Like last year, that killed other teams where, you know, Westbrook could, you know, lob to Steven Adams or throw a pocket pass to him or Cantor or whatever it is. Or now he's really looking for spot up threes. It's in a part the way teams are guarding them this year. Teams are really obviously collapsing in on the paint way more than they have before, in part because, you know, that guy who called Porzingis a uniform is no longer in Oklahoma City. And that obviously creates a lot of space. And now it's Andre Robertson at the three, and teams are happy to help off of him. And, you know, there are consistently two, three, four guys in the paint when Westbrook drives. And it's closing off that pass. But every once in a while, like, I think when that pass works, the Thunder offense works. Like Andre Drummond last night against when they played Detroit, Andre Drummond was basically drifting over to Westbrook every single time Westbrook went towards the lane off a pick and roll. And the Thunder, because I don't know, it was you know, it was obviously something in his head about, I can't let Westbrook get to the rim, I can't let Westbrook get to the rim. And he was shifting over to try to impede his lane. But he was leaving open that pass to Adams or that pass to Cantor basically every time. And the Thunder ran pick and roll on something like I forget the exact number. It was double-digit consecutive possessions in the fourth.
I think they hit the exact same pass on three possessions in a row.
Yeah, but it wasn't even that pass. Like it was double-digit consecutive possessions where they at least ran a high pick and roll in the fourth quarter, and it was because the Pistons were defending it like that. And that's when the Thunder offense looks the best. Like Denver was kind of doing that. The Lakers, the first time they played the Lakers, were doing that. And that's when Russell Westbrook looks the best. It's when the Thunder offense looks the best. Now Joakim Noah is, granted, you know, his minutes are inconsistent, and, you know, who knows what's going to happen if they think, you know, Porzingis lineups work better against them because, you know, he can pull Adams away from the basket and whatnot. But, you know, if Noah plays minutes, you know, Noah's a disciplined defender who probably isn't going to do that. But they have, their offense looks the best when teams end up doing that kind of stuff. And that's not a team who's scheming to defend him that way. That's just a center whose mind is kind of being jumbled by how, you know, scary plug on against Westbrook can be. And he's doing something that's throwing the rest of his defense off.
Yeah. I mean, look, even if the center does that, you can still stop that lob if you help aggressively enough off of Robertson or Oladipo or whoever the power forward is on the court. And that's what a lot of teams have been doing early in the year. You know, in that Detroit game, that helper wasn't coming down into the paint far enough. And that's why Adams was open, I think. You know, a lot of people have noticed that, obviously, throughout the season, that the weak side help is so much more aggressive. Even the strong side help is more aggressive because they just don't care if Westbrook hits a pass to one of those guys on the perimeter. They will take that far more preferably over him getting to the basket or him finding Adams for a lob or a pocket pass. You know, last year that was like the third thing they had to worry about, stopping that pass to Adams, you know, whether it was Westbrook downhill as the number one or the kick out to Durant as the number one, either way, those were one and two. And then Adams was the third. Now that's almost the first thing they worry about. Like, they'll let Westbrook try to finish over two guys, or they'll let him throw a pass to the perimeter. They don't want him hitting that lob all game because, like you said, that's when the offense really looks good. And that's sort of the primary thing I think teams are geared up to stop right now.
When the Thunder went through film room or go through film room, whether they've done it yet or not, I'm not sure what their schedule is today. But when they look at film on the Knicks as a team, whose name do you think they say first, Porzingis or Carmelo Anthony?
I think it's still Carmelo. That's what several coaches have said when they came in. Like, even though you definitely have to worry about both of them, things still run for the most part through Carmelo. Like, he gets, even during this stretch where KP has been, you know, destroying things and getting the ball way more often than he had earlier in the year, Carmelo is still touching the ball more. He's still leading the team in shots for the most part. And he's still, I think, the primary focus of defenses. And that's sort of, it's not the only reason why KP has been so good, but it's definitely a big part of it. And he's mentioned that himself. You know, he wouldn't be scoring 30 a night if the defense was fully trained on him instead of having to devote a lot of its attention to Carmelo and some of its attention to Rose or Jennings or whoever that guy is bringing the ball up the court and running the offense. So it's definitely helped him a lot that the defenses still feel that they need to devote a ton of attention to wherever Melo is on the court.
Where do the Knicks shoot around again? Where do they shoot around this year?
They shoot around at the practice facility.
That's such a pain. I've always wondered, I've never asked anybody, but I've always wondered, like, how, if that impacts free agents.
I don't know. I mean, it's annoying for me. I can't get out there. Like, right. it would take me 2 hours to get there. I got to pay to take a train to get out there. Like, I live all the way downtown. I got to go all the way up to Midtown, and then I got to get on a train, and it takes however long it takes to get out there, an hour or whatever it is. It's a haul. Like, I can't do that.
Right, because the Knicks – okay, so the Knicks practice facility is in Westchester, for those who don't know, and their games are obviously – at MSG in you know, 33rd Street. And I wonder, like, all things, I don't think of, like, someone's dying to come to the Knicks and then, you know, they're going to go to a place they hate because of it. But, like, if you told me, all things being equal, I can have one office or two offices that are, like, right next to each other or close to each other or in the same building or whatever it is, or I can have to schlep out to Westchester where if they're the morning – and then I can't go home in between shoot around, and then I gotta you know haul all the way into the city just so I can get to a game in time like that. And I gotta do that 82 times a year, and then for practice I gotta go out there, and then for games I gotta go to 33rd, and it's like inconvenient for me to live in either the city
for shoot around out there. But and it's also they may not have shoot around every game. You know, it's probably like 25 times a year, 30 times a year.
But they still have practice.
Oh yeah. I mean, it's for the same day.
Right. I mean, it's still a pain. It's undeniably a pain. I wonder if that's a tiebreaker, if that's ever been a tiebreaker.
There's also not really a place to put a practice facility in the city.
There's one in Brooklyn.
I'm talking about there's not really a place for the Knicks to build a new practice facility in Manhattan.
I like that that you, in typical New York fashion, got a little bit insulted that you said the city and I said Brooklyn. And you got a little bit insulted with me.
Just a little bit.
Referring to Brooklyn as the city.
Yeah, I'm not insulted so much as just I think you should know better. Because when you live here, obviously Brooklyn is part of the city. But when you say the city when you live here, everybody here knows that you mean Manhattan, and like even when you're in Brooklyn, it's like, oh, I got to go back to the city, or I'm gonna go to the city. So you knew what I meant, and you just did it on purpose.
Yeah, maybe I did. I'm an Oklahoman now. This is my
you lived here longer than me.
My life with you, liberal. Yeah, I was born there and grew up there, but my life with you, liberal New Yorkers, is over now.
Yeah, I'm not gonna touch that one. Let's talk about. Let's talk about this game. Oh man. Okay, so
one day I'm gonna start getting someone's gonna find out where I live. I'm gonna start getting hate mail.
Yeah. The Thunder are coming in, 10-8. The Knicks are 8-8. Interestingly, the Knicks are 7-2 at home and only 1-6 on the road. That's a huge split, obviously. And a lot of it basically comes down to their defense on threes. So that's something I'm definitely going to be interested in watching. Like, are they leaving these Oklahoma City shooters open? And if they do, you know, we're using that term shooters loosely. Can they capitalize on that?
Well, the Thunder are, I have to say, a little bit better of a shooting team right now than they were to start the year. They don't take that many threes, which is kind of the problem. You know, of late, they're taking a lot more. I think they're actually in the top. You know what? I shouldn't even say that because I'm pretty sure they're in the top half of the league in three-point attempts per game now, which is pretty decent. And that, a lot of that is just because they're leaving so many shooters open, though, that they kind of have to take those threes because they're there. So I would say if any other team were guarded the way that they're guarded, they would take that proverbial, you know, that hypothetical team would take maybe more threes than the Thunder are taking. But with Anthony Morrow playing now, they kind of have a real threat from three-point range, a guy who defenses are guarding. I think that opened up a little bit against Detroit. Like, look, Anthony Morrow has his flaws defensively, and you know, there are issues that Anthony Morrow brings, no question. But there are also some positives. I think we saw that a little bit against Detroit when he played with the starting unit. And that's something that helps with the shooting and the spacing, too, if he gets out there with Oladipo and whatnot.
Yeah, I think he made, like, his first three of the season the other night.
Yes, he did.
He's been one of those guys that I'm always like, why doesn't Anthony Morrow play more? And then every new coach comes in and it's like, I can't put this guy on the court because he can't play defense. So between that and like the way, or I guess the success the Knicks have guarding Westbrook, because he has routinely killed them in the past, especially at the Garden. I think he has triple doubles in his last two games at the Garden. And one of them was in like 25 minutes played or something like that.
Yeah, it was a third quarter triple double.
Yeah, that was on Christmas a couple of years ago.
Yeah, the third quarter triple doubles are like routine now.
Yeah, he's absurd.
He's got more third quarter triple doubles this year than anybody else in the league other than Harden has triple doubles.
Yeah,
it's just unreal.
Yeah, I mean, I saw Tom Haberstroh say this morning that if Westbrook gets 11 rebounds in tomorrow's game, he'll be averaging a triple-double on the season.
Tom Haberstroh must be reading my my columns, because that was a note in my story from this morning.
You should have sent me the story. I could have cited you instead. I'm reading too much Twitter and not enough Norman transcripts.
There you go. Got to be getting that Norman transcript subscription.
What do you expect to see from the Thunder on the other side of the ball? Is it going to be a lot of just Robertson on Melo, or are they going to mix up his matchups? And then, I mean, there's nobody that can really guard Porzingis consistently, but is that going to be like, okay, we're just going to trust Sabonis to do it? Is it going to be Adams trying to chase him around the perimeter? What do you think we'll see on those two?
I think we're going to see Robertson on Melo for most of the game. That's kind of what Donovan's done when they go up against good perimeter players. They kind of just... He just makes sure Robertson is on the floor at all those times. Like when they played, you know, the Rockets was kind of the most extreme example of this. Like there were a few minutes when Harden played with Robertson off the floor, but something like 33 of the 36 or 37 minutes that Harden played, Robertson was out there and he was guarding him one-on-one. I think it's possible, if not probable, they throw Robertson on there. And they don't switch on pick and rolls with Melo. They just say, you know, hey, Andre, go out there and man Carmelo Anthony, and if you can't do it on your own, then our defense is going to die for it. I don't think they're going to give him that much help. They have a lot of confidence in Andre Robertson. I think as they should. Last couple games, he hasn't been as good, last three or four games, but I do think he's an absolutely elite perimeter defender. I think he's a really great perimeter defender. He's had some amazing one-on-one games.
His arms are just so long; it's crazy.
Yeah, no, he's also like really disciplined. He
moves his feet really well. Like he just knows where to be. He's a good defender.
Yeah, he's a really good defender, and he's a really good scouting report defender. He really knows players' tendencies. He's a big film watcher. So he really studies players' tendencies and really knows that kind of stuff, which is, I think, part of why he's really good against guys like Harden and DeRozan. Because I think part of why Harden and DeRozan are really good is because, you know, people talk about the ability to get to the line and that kind of stuff. I think part of the reason why is because they're such a changeup or curveball or whatever proverbial non-fastball pitch you want it to be in the midst of a regular season. They're such different types of offensive players. And the guys who are just going to ISO you and try to score on you, that you can kind of catch defenders off guard, whether for a quarter or two quarters or a whole game, because just the way they play is unique in that sense. You know, the way they get you to foul and the way they get you off balance and that kind of stuff. And Roberson is always ready for that kind of stuff because I think he's pretty obsessive about his preparation process. And I think that's something that allows him to defend guys like that well. Now, Melo's a more conventional great scorer than, you know, a guy like, you know, Harden is, where he's got those kind of weird, awkward-looking moves that he wants to be weird and awkward-looking. But he's a really good scouting report defender, which is why I think in part they feel pretty confident in putting him on guys one-on-one and not giving him help and not switching and saying, like, all right, you're going to have to make our defense today. And not every single time, but a lot of the time he ends up doing that. If I had to guess, I would say we're going to see Sabonis on Porzingis to start. Now, maybe if he struggles or something like that, maybe we see Adams go over there. I wouldn't be shocked, but I think they like Adams around the basket more than around the perimeter. I think they prefer that in general. Now, if he plays the five, then you got to put Adams there. But if, you know, I think Adams on Noah makes a lot more sense just because you can keep him around the basket. And if Sabonis really struggles, then you adjust from there. But Sabonis, for a rookie, is a really good team defender. Like, he's definitely ahead of where your average 20-year-old rookie is in terms of just understanding and executing team defense. And I think that's something that will help on, like, you know, the in terms of just not leaving Porzingis wide open on the perimeter, you know, not getting, you know, totally lost in a pick and roll or something like that. I'm not saying he's an ideal Porzingis defender or anything like that, but I think it's something that will certainly help him in that venture and maybe won't necessarily need the Thunder to say, like, oh man, we got to change this 3 minutes into the game.
Yeah, that matchup is definitely going to be an interesting one to watch because, you know, the KP's defense has been much better lately, but the one thing I think he's still struggled a little bit with is closing out under control against shooters on the perimeter and not letting them go by him. Sabonis has not shot as well lately as he did at the start of the season. But
he did 3 threes yesterday.
I'm talking in general here. Like, yes. Over the last six, seven games or so, he did not shoot as well as he did at the start of the year. But he does have that, you know, pump and go in his bag of tricks. I'd say that's probably his better option on the perimeter is to do that. So watching, you know, how that plays out will be interesting. And I also want to see the Knicks have been lately going with KP at center with the second unit to start, you know, second and fourth quarters. And that's going to put a lot of pressure on Enes Kanter defensively. And that could be a time of the game where the Knicks could really take advantage because
I think we might see a Joffrey LeVern, Jeremy Grant at the 4 second unit in this game,
and have them cover. And then what you put
LeVern,
and then what you take Kanter and put him on, like,
no, I mean, I think it's one of those games where Kanter doesn't get a lot of minutes.
Ah, okay, that could be interesting. Yeah, so that I would think that's a win for the Knicks also because that's one of the few ways that second unit can score.
Right.
So that's definitely something that could work in their favor.
Right. Even though Joffrey LeVern is a all-world 3-point shooter now.
Yeah, well, he is King Joffrey.
He is. I didn't realize that he is, like, a hilarious human being.
So not like Joffrey Baratheon.
No, I don't watch Game of Thrones.
Oh, well, he was not funny. He was the worst, like the Pat Riley of Kings. If the Knicks go small to close the game, as they have been over the last few when they've gotten into close games, the Thunder obviously for years have tended to stay big against teams that go small. Is that something you would still expect against this Knicks team with how much space they create with KP at the 5 and Melo at the 4?
First of all, I'm just going to say that I'm really disappointed in myself for not making a joke that Vlade Divac is obviously the Pat Riley of Kings.
Oh, God.
Second of all, I was so excited to say that I actually didn't hear your question. I just kind of tuned it out. I was thinking my answer. Yeah. I have no idea what to say right now.
Yeah, if the Knicks go small to end the game, obviously we know the Thunder are a team that likes to stay big. I mean, do you think they stay big against the Knicks that goes small, not just with shooting at the four, but shooting at the five also?
I think it's possible that they adjust. Billy Donovan is like real quick. I think you could argue it's a flaw at times, and I think you can argue it's his best quality as a coach sometimes, where he is really quick to adjust. He is like definitely one of the least stubborn coaches in the league in terms of just mending his rotations.
Which is interesting because at the start of last season, that was like a big criticism of him was that he didn't adjust anything.
Mm-hmm. He has gone in the opposite direction.
Yep.
Like he will change stuff all the time. And it's not – I think people from the outside, sometimes it appears to just be, why the hell is he playing this guy one night when he hasn't played in three games? Like, what is going on? Why is he doing this? And he's not just randomly throwing guys out there. Like, there are reasons for it. And I think of late, you know, we've seen Jeremy Grant go for Laverne 5 or Grant for Sabonis 5. We've seen those lineups where he goes small and adjusts to his opponent, which is going small. You know, something doesn't work in the first half of a game. If it's not working, like numerically, if it's not working, if a lineup just gets outscored, that's not incentive for him to scrap it. But if he sees something schematically that doesn't work, even if the lineup looks good in 4 minutes in terms of, you know, the numbers they're putting up or whatever it is, if he notices something that schematically isn't working, he'll scrap that for a second half. We've seen him do that. Like against Detroit the other night, or not against Detroit, against Denver the other night, Joffre Laverne was playing pretty well in that first half. He had like 13 points in the first half or something like that and barely played in the second half because Billy wanted to go to a lineup that could switch more defensively, and he really played Jeremy Grant a ton of minutes and put Jeremy Grant as a four, and their defense was not good down the stretch in a game that they were pretty bad defensively, but it was definitely better in lineups that were kind of more versatile where they could have four guys who could switch and then Adams at the five just kind of anchoring that unit, and the defense looked a little bit better. I think Billy's going to start going to lineups like that more often because I think Jeremy Grant – I think he's better as a four than he is as a three. What did you say?
Definitely he is.
Yeah.
I don't think that's really a question.
And I think Billy's lineups are kind of starting to show that now. Like, with the way that this roster is constructed, playing Jeremy Grant at the three makes more sense just because you've got four bigs in your rotation in Adams and Sabonis and Laverne and Cantor. And those guys are all either fours or fives and that's it. But Grant is a three and a four, and if you want to get him playing time, you kind of have to put him in the three. Plus, the Thunder, their weakest position is the three right now. I mean, Robertson's a great defender, but, you know, he's obviously, we know what he gives you on offense. And, you know, Singler doesn't really play, and Oladipo would be playing a position down. Mora would be playing a position down. Like, they're all major weaknesses in this. You know, Abrines would be playing a position down. Like, they're all major weaknesses in these scenarios. So they kind of just kind of forced to shove Grant into the three most of the time. But I do think naturally in an ideal scenario for him, he's a four. And I think Donovan's lineups are starting to show that lately. So I think it's definitely possible that we see Jeremy Grant at the four in this game a decent amount. Like he could totally get more minutes at the four than at the three in this one.
Yeah, I think the you know, adjusting in game is something that you can say about Jeff Hornacek too. Other than Melo and KP, he has shown a willingness to sort of ride whoever's playing well at the other positions. Like on any given night, Kylo Quinn could play more than Billy Hernan Gomez, or either one of them could play more than Joakim Noah. And like Kuzminskis could play more than Endor or the other way around, or Justin Holiday might get more minutes than both of them combined. Or like he'll ride Brandon Jennings for 15 straight minutes if he's playing well, or sit him down and only play him like 12 minutes if Rose really has it going and Jennings isn't doing anything. Other than Melo and KP, he has been willing to mix and match a lot and get to sort of whatever works on that particular night based on, you know, what he sees offensively, defensively, whatever it is, who's shooting well, who's getting into the paint. You know, sometimes he'll go two point guards, play Rose and Jennings together. Sometimes it'll be like Jennings and Holiday with KP at the five, or maybe he'll play Jennings and KP and Hernan Gomez, or Noah and O'Quinn for four minutes at a time. Like he's done a lot of, like you said, mixing and matching and adjusting to what's ever happening on a given night. So that's something that we could definitely watch out for on both sides.
Knicks fans loving Brandon Jennings is like the most predictable thing of this.
Oh, NBA so season. Predictable. I did a podcast with Seth on it, Seth Rosenthal, before the start of the season, where they had the first preseason.
Whoa, game. Jared, don't throw out your back. Don't throw out your back when you have to bend over to pick up that name.
Where we were talking about after the first preseason game when Knicks fans were already chanting Jennings' name because he, like, gotten some fourth-string point guard's face. And now he's doing that sort of, like, every night. I would say he's still not been very good defensively, but he puts a ton of effort in on defense, and people just really appreciate that.
You know what's funny about Knicks fans? And growing up around Knicks fans as a non-Knicks fan when I was growing up, it was, like, super apparent to me. Knicks fans, it's this great irony of Knicks fans that there's this one particular type of star that Knicks fans really don't like. And it's I think it's because they were conditioned during, like, the post-Van Gundy era, like whether it's Isaiah Thomas or whomever else, when they were just kind of going out and getting these kind of, like, ball-dominant stars who weren't quite stars, or I should say ball-dominant big names who weren't stars, you know, Marbury or Steve Francis or whomever. And they always felt like they were let down when the Knicks would win like 33 games, or worse sometimes. And I think Knicks fans always really hate that star. Like, Knicks fans throw so much shade at Carmelo Anthony, who's a Hall of Famer over the last 6 years, but they love those same characteristics in role players. Like, they love J.R. Smith, and like they love Brandon Jennings. And I think it's this unbelievably odd irony of the Knicks fan, which makes the Knicks fan one of the most complex fan bases of, like, all of the NBA.
We just like what we like, man. it sort of depends based on each player. Like, if you're looking for certain things from someone and they give you those things, Knicks fans like him. If you're looking for certain things from someone and you only get them semi-consistently or you don't get them at all, Knicks fans hate them. It's different based on every guy, you know, what expectations are, blah, blah, blah. You know, on the same night, Knicks fans can go from, like, booing Melo because he misses an isolation jumper in the second quarter when the shot clock's winding down to cheering the exact same shot that he just happens to make. Like, it's the same exact play, and they're booing the fact that he isolated, not the fact that he missed at one point of the game, but it's the same play and he makes the shot later. And it's like, yeah, that was awesome. Well, because, you know, it went in. But yeah, they're a fickle bunch, and they know what they like and they know what they don't. And, you know, they're not afraid to let people know about that.
Before we go, what are they going to do? I mean, this guy, Russell Westbrook, I've been watching him all year. Like, he could be a big name in this league one day. I think he's pretty solid. What are the Knicks going to do about guarding him? Who's his primary defender going to be? What's your team strategy in going up against Westbrook?
Pray. Yeah, I mean, look, there's no, it's a dumb cliche, but there's no stopping Westbrook. You just have to hold him down. Like, don't let him go for 50, 10, and 10. Hold him to 28, 10, and 10 or something like that, and try to make everybody else beat you. Send help from wherever you can. That's something that they've been doing a little bit less aggressively lately because they had been getting killed with that cross-court pass to a shooter. But I think you're way more comfortable with that against this OKC team than you are with Westbrook getting to the basket or getting it to Adams on that roll. So they may have to go back to a style of defense that they've sort of not ditched, but made much less aggressive over these last 6-7 games or so. Then they have to dial up that aggression again just to stop him from getting whatever he wants on his way to the rim.
31, 11, and 9.9 right now.
Yeah, he's not bad.
He is not bad. The rebounds are honestly the most impressive to me.
Yeah, I mean, look, he's been the best rebounding guard in the league for a while.
But this is different, though. Like, his rebound rate right now his rebound rate is higher than Karl Anthony Towns's. And, like, Karl Anthony Towns is having a good rebounding season for a big
game. Right. He's averaging more rebounds per game than, like, Boogie and, like, a bunch of other centers. It's bonkers. Like,
it's by far So NBA.com only allows you to go back to 1996, and you can request stats with the league. So I might do this if I I'm not going to waste their time if I don't like actually write an article on it. But if I do write an article on it, he's got on Basketball Reference, he's got a 15.8% rebound rate right now. And I went back to 96, and the highest rebound rate for a point guard since 1996 was Jason Kidd, had a 13% rebound rate one season, which is pretty amazing. And that's unsurprising. It's unsurprising that's the name. That's the guy who has it. But, like, Westbrook is 3 percentage points higher. It's not even close.
No, it's not at all.
So when the heck was the last time that a point guard had this rebound rate?
I mean, maybe like Oscar, I guess.
Maybe, except they're not going to have that data because they may not have had possession data then.
Right, so, and like, it's also like they were playing much faster games, so even though he was averaging 10, 11 rebounds a game, it may not have been as high a percentage.
Right. The rebound rate might not be that high. Like, is he going to break the record for highest rebound rate by a point guard this year?
That
is really possible.
It definitely looks like it. Like, I don't see any reason it would slow down by, you know, 4 or 5% throughout the rest of the season that it would take to drop him below Kidd.
Yeah. No, I mean, he would have to rebound worse than he did last year for the rest of the year in order to drop below Kidd.
Yeah, it's look, the Knicks are not a great defensive rebounding team, so maybe he's got a chance to pull some off tomorrow as well.
Yeah, and the thing is, like, people credit him as a great offensive rebounder. Obviously, for a point guard, he is a great offensive rebounder. Like, obviously, dude's averaging 10 rebounds a game as a point guard. But the defensive rebound rate is amazing.
Yeah.
He's got a higher defensive rebound rate than Enes Kanter. He has the highest defensive rebound rate on the Thunder.
There's honestly, like, nothing you can really say. Like, he's just so good.
Yeah.
It's so wild, man. It's so much fun too. And, like, you know me, let Westbrook be Westbrook all day. Like, that's my guy. It's awesome. I just, you know, it would be nice if they could play a little better. And it's not necessarily a roster that plays to his strengths, but they're making it work anyway. You know, like, what are they? They're 10-8. That's, what is that, like, a high 40s win pace?
Yeah, it's like 40-something.
45, 46 win pace. You know, look, that would be great if they got to that level.
Yeah, I mean, look, I think there aren't that many organizations in the league, I think, or that many teams in the league that can lose a top. Now, there aren't that many teams who have a top level guy. But there aren't that many teams who could lose a top level guy and still maintain and be, you know, in the playoff hunt.
Look what happened to the last few teams that lost guys that good. They were terrible, basically, like, right away, other than probably the Heat. And they still had, you know, two borderline top 15, 20 guys on the team in Wade and Bosch, plus, you know, other rotation guys. And even they fell off last year when Bosch got hurt.
Right.
Or not last year, 2 years
ago. 2 years ago. But that was the LeBron year. Like, they were a 30-something win team that first year after LeBron.
Right. You know, you look at these guys, obviously Westbrook is still a top 5, top 10 guy. But there's nobody else close to that level on this team. So it's really impressive that they're still able to be at the very least an above average team.
Yes, but you doth forget that they have the best interview in the NBA, which makes my life much easier.
I'm guessing we're referring to Steven Adams here?
We're referring to Steven Adams.
Yeah. Steven Adams, mate.
He's responsible for at least 70% of my Twitter followers.
He's great, man. Call Drogo. Drogo against the Unicorn. Going to be fun stuff.
All right, so I'll see you tomorrow night.
Yeah, I think I will be there, but not 100% positive yet.
You're playing hard to get.
Yeah, well, I injured myself playing football last week, and I'm in pretty intense pain. My hamstring sort of feels like it's being yanked out the back of my leg.
Are you on crutches right now?
I'm not on crutches. I was playing football on Thursday morning, and all of a sudden it just sort of popped and went straight down, and I've been in intense pain ever since. So I'm not sure if I necessarily want to be going out to the garden and up and walking around and going everywhere all night. So
that is rough.
Yeah, it's not great, but in better news, should be a fun game.
Anything to plug before we go?
Yeah, you know, listen to the podcast, look out for my stuff. I've got, you know, every week I'm writing all over the place. Follow me on Twitter and you can find where I'm at.
Yeah, what are you Yaya Dubin on Twitter still?
Nah, well, that's the name that's there, but it's J.A. Dubin 5.
J.A. Dubin 5. I don't know. I'm not going to pretend like I read your tweets.
Don't read my tweets. Yeah, don't read my tweets.
You can click follow and then mute.
Yeah, do that.
And we're both – you're on every day, right?
What's that?
You're on every day, right?
Yeah. Lately been a couple of days that I couldn't, but yes, yeah, every day is the plan.
That's the locked on formula. I'm on every day too. And you can find me on Twitter at Fred Katz, and you can email me at lockedonthunder@gmail.com and lockedonnormantranscript.com for Thunder coverage. I'll be out in New York for the game on Monday, and we'll be podcasting after the game there. That's going to do it for today. Thanks to Jared for coming on. Back with you tomorrow, like I said, for more Thunder and NBA talk. Until next time, though, Locked On Thunder is locking up.